Welcome into K-State Online. I'm Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway. Tuesday, August 12th. We are here ready to discuss some K-State football like I told you we would do yesterday. And we do so after both Matt Wells and Joe Klanderman spoke with the media today. So K-State's coordinators getting their last cracks in before the team heads over to Ireland. And while Joe Klanderman, I've been a Klandy man guy since the get-go. People from the K-Man days might remember that. I was an early Klandy guy. We're not going to talk about him today because at the end of the day, KSO, at least these two guys right here, me even more than Drew, I don't care about defense. We care about offense on this show. So we are going to talk about the offense. And Matt Wells had, I thought, three things that were quite notable based on what he said and how he presented them today. And that's why I really want to talk about it.
If we were going to talk defense, we probably would have had Fan on the show. Like, let's be real here.
Yeah, that guy loves defense.
I also might have missed this yesterday, so that's kind of on me for not noticing things about our own show. Is this the first time that we're having the new logo on, or did I just miss that yesterday?
This is the first time that I was adjusting some things. It's not a total rehaul, but I was trying to. I was like, well, you know, we're trying to get this thing kind of flipped around, and then also I kind of wanted to try and, like, I don't know, there were some things I wanted to try to make it easier for me when we start mainly doing in-season shows and specifically like when we go live after games. So there's some toying going on, but I didn't want to totally throw things around because I know people are probably like, oh, this guy's always tinkering with the graphics. It's true. It's a sick obsession of mine. But yes, the KSO presentation is a little bit different today.
Like with the Super Bowl, can always tell that it's about to be a new season when the new KSO graphics roll around.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just I'm doing all these on my own. And so it's like I think to myself, it's like, do I really like how I've done that? And because it's free labor, it's not like, you know, I'm Fox paying somebody thousands of dollars to do it. I don't feel married to it for years. It's like, 3 months has gone by. We're getting ready to start the season. Now's the right time to do it. And now this is what you'll see all the way through football season. So enjoy it, hate it, whatever you want to do. You don't hate it? You were telling people to hate it.
Yeah, no, I said unless you hate it, then it'll get changed. That's how it goes.
Well, if the people really hate it, then I can change it.
I'm going to say this goes better than the Fox score bug did for the Super Bowl.
Well, boy, do you want me to try and – no, I would never. That was so bad what they tried there. I was so disappointed. My Super Bowl is the graphics used in the Super Bowl, not the actual Super Bowl. I care. The game is secondary to when all these new broadcasters are supposed to debut their new graphics, and then they don't. Like, I just – and then they do sometimes, and Fox was wildly disappointing. Fox hit it out of the park. The graphics that they did for the Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl in 2020, might be the best they've ever done. And then they used it for the college games through 2022. Phenomenal. And then, I mean, they screwed with both the NFL one. So they changed it again when they had the Super Bowl with the Eagles and Chiefs, which they had, you know, again this past year because of a weird trade that was made in the process, whatever. Nobody cares about that. But then they also changed what they did for the college games a couple years ago. And the first night that I saw it, I think UCF and Sam Houston might have been the first game or whatever. And I was sending anybody that would listen the message like, this looks like the graphics from the 2009 Wii version of college football.
Oh, yeah, that was really bad.
And those are still terrible. I hope those go away this year. My hopes are not high, though, because Fox sometimes treats college football like, you know, the ugly stepchild. So we'll see what ends up happening. Anyways, let's get into the man who's not a stepchild anymore. He's been adopted. He is fully Chris Klieman's son now. Matt Wells, he gets to call all the plays. He doesn't just have his little hand in it. No, he's got both hands fully in it. He gets to be the main man calling plays this year, and he's going to be doing it from the field. Matt Wells announced that today. It was kind of just like a little throw-in question by Mitch to say, hey, you're going to be calling plays from the field or from the booth? And he said it will be from the field this season. do you have a preference one way or the other on where your OC is calling plays from? And then specifically, what does it mean to you that Matt Wells is going to be calling plays from the field at K-State?
See, I think that it makes sense for like a quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator to want to be on the field, because you probably want to like immediately be able to talk to your quarterback and not have to do the whole phone thing. I think that makes sense. And like, especially because you would guess that this means that Brian Lepak will probably be up there. I think that's probably where Brian Lepak like would really thrive, is being upstairs. He was upstairs in the Colin Klein years as offensive coordinator, and now he's going to be up there again, I would assume. So I don't really have a preference either way, but it is kind of crazy because, you know, college football is so different in a lot of ways in the NFL, obviously. But this is like more of the NFL model. K-State going to have both coordinators on the field.
So I guess to that extent, are you worried then if you think it does result in Brian Lepak going up to the booth? Because wasn't that the thing last year or 2 years ago where Riley moved back down to the field because they were worried that there was a problem because he wasn't there with the offensive lineman in the middle of the game? Like, is it, even if I think this is a good thing for Matt Wells, if this is the place he's most comfortable, I think it's good for him to be able to be right there and talk with Avery Johnson and all that. I also just think when you're on the field, I know some people don't like this. I know that we are in 2025 and we don't like to just use the human element of things, but sometimes it might just be good for the offensive coordinator to call the game from how he sees it and not have, you know, looking straight down, being able to see everything on the field, has all this technology right in front of him, has 1,000 different coaches on top of him in the booth. I think it might just be good that he can stand there, call his plays, and get after it. And then when the offense gets off the field, he can talk to Avery Johnson right there. But any concerns that, even if this is good for the Matt Wells situation, that it's bad for anywhere else where it decides who goes up and who stays down?
I mean, there's always some concern. That's the catch-22 that you have in this. There's like good and bad with like where you put anybody. So I think it's like more of like where you feel most comfortable with having everybody. And like, I would imagine that Matt Wells probably feels the most comfortable on the field, and maybe Brian Lepak wanted to be upstairs anyway. So it could just be as simple as that. So I don't really have any true concerns about that. But like I said, there's pros and cons of literally every single person that you could put up there. I would imagine that I believe Sean McGuire, who is like the assistant quarterbacks coach, because now everybody has a position coach title, even though you were like an analyst before. I imagine that he's probably one that will move upstairs, so you'll have like some quarterback representation upstairs. But also, as our Derek Young pointed out, how Aviva Stadium is kind of laid out makes a lot more sense, I think, for Matt Wells to be on the field because of where the press box is and like where they would be.
Well, that's true too. You kind of got to prep for what's going to be facing you in Ireland in game one, because it is such an important game because it is a conference game and you want to get off on the right foot there. In thinking of the conference game, before we get into some of the other comments from Matt Wells, I do want to point out that not only did he have good things to say about John Heacock, the Iowa State defensive coordinator, simultaneously in Ames, Iowa this morning, Taylor Mauser and John Heacock were meeting with the media, and John Heacock had a lot of good things to say about K-State, more so than just Matt Wells generally saying, hey, I think that he's one of the best in the game, all this. The exact quote from John Heacock was, "The quarterback's a Heisman Trophy candidate. The tailback's incredible. The wide receiver, that's incredible. They do a great job with their O-line." I know that these two staffs in particular really like to praise each other.
They do. But
that, to me, is like that's legit right there. Mm. And here's where you could defend it, is you could say, well, yeah, but is he just saying that so if Iowa State does poop their pants, like that he's got a little bit of like, well, look how great they are. Okay, that could be. But then does that mean that he's got a little bit of fear that that might happen? So he's planting the seed for it. So like either John Heacock truly believes this, which I think he does. I mean, he saw Jace Brown play incredibly in Ames last year. All of these coaches are worried about the talent that Avery Johnson has, even if, you know, some people want to try and deny it and say that he was terrible last year and all this other stuff. Like, they understand it. And then I think you mix in the fact that we've just talked about that Heacock and Wells seem to be quite fond of each other, that he probably thinks that Matt Wells is going to do some great things to make him even better. I think this is significant to hear, you know, what, 11 days before the game kicks off?
Yeah, I think that it's significant to hear more than any other game. And I don't know if this is because of, like, we know more on the inside from Iowa State than like most other schools in the conference. Does this not seem like every year these two staffs are the most complimentary towards each other than any other game that K-State plays?
I mean, these guys, they love each other. There's
like I don't know. I know that they all have like mutual respect for each other, and like they're all really competitive and want to win this game, obviously, but like the amount of like praise from both sides about both sides of the ball, you're gonna hear it next week from Chris Kleiman, I would guess, and you're gonna hear it next week from Matt Campbell about how much they really respect each other too. So this series with these staffs that are both assembled, there is a lot of overlap between them, and I think that that's kind of one of the reasons that you probably see it. But it feels like every year, this is the game that both staffs like really rave about the other team more than any other game that K-State plays.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's dive into the real stuff that matters, the things that were said by Matt Wells today, and get back to those. First off, he talked about what has improved for Avery Johnson this year, and I thought that it was pretty significant. Now, we can get into, is that actually going to happen? That's easy to say in August before games have been played, but it's a step in the right direction of how you would like Avery Johnson to play if you're a K-State fan.
I think he's probably more comfortable in his own skin, in his own ability. I don't have to be this certain type of player. I don't need to listen to the media or somebody ask me about being a certain prototypical blank kind of quarterback. I'm good when I run. I'm good when I throw it. I think he is further along in coverage recognition. I think he is further along in his ability to dissect what a defense is doing to him a little quicker. And that takes time. That takes live reps, and that takes a lot of looks. And, you know, certainly with all the safeties that Joe plays, and, I mean, in the back end, that can be a challenge for us in training camp. But it's a good look knowing who our first opponent is.
So I think the thing to take away there is mainly he's taking the plays that are there as opposed to I need to be this, I need to be that, which we've known for a while. In a lot of sports, you get a lot of instances of it where a guy goes out there and he's phenomenal in some areas, but then he's had all these different people say, no, you need to be this, you need to be that. And it changes the way that they play. And it can happen in football. It can happen in basketball. It can happen in any of the other sports, but it primarily comes up, I think, with quarterbacks. And then also in basketball with mostly, well, it can happen with any of them. With guards, it's like, oh, you need to do this more. And it's like, eh, that's not really your game. Or with bigs, it's like, oh, you gotta find a way to shoot it better. It's like, I don't need you taking 50 threes at 29% this season. Don't do that. What did you make of what Matt Wells had to say about Avery Johnson?
Yeah, again, people don't like to talk about like the human element, but like that was a very human answer from Matt Wells, kind of just talking about there's probably a bunch of pressure on Avery Johnson, not just from himself, but also just from everybody around him, people on social media, just kind of talking about like what he needs to be. And it just sounds like he's really blocked it out. Yeah. Also, And that's a good thing because you want him to play free, play fast, play however he wants to play. If he wants to rush for 1,500 yards this year, I'm not going to stop him. But if he also wants to throw for 4,000 yards this year, and I'm having some hyperbole here on purpose, but if he wants to throw for 4,000 yards this year and it really helps K-State win, I'm not going to stop him either. But also, again, when you're talking about more of like the reps and seeing the field more and just seeing what other teams are doing to him, that's not like a total surprise. This is why, again, like we've been banging this drum really for the last 2 or 3 months that, you know, if last year is the floor for Avery Johnson, like the ceiling is going to be very, very, very high. So I think that the more that he sees, the better he's going to continue to get. And even, and he pointed this out during the press conference, the way that K-State runs their defense is good for Avery Johnson because he sees a picture pre and post snap that are totally different. So having that and knowing that Iowa State's going to do probably the same thing to him because that is what Iowa State does defensively, I think that that will end up being very, very beneficial in the long run. And, you know, it would be something for him to just come out and have like a great game in Ireland. But when we get into this, like next week, I have some questions for you since you're usually the question asker.
I appreciate it. I do like to sometimes give my opinion.
But yeah, I got some questions for you about what you would do if you're Matt Wells.
Okay.
First drive, first series.
Well, let's see. Four verts. Ever heard of it?
The
Wildcat with Dylan and Joe Jackson.
Parker Fleming. So funny every time that somebody says like, what play would you call here? And he always puts up the picture of four verts on Twitter. That always makes me laugh.
I mean, you know, it works in video games if you have a fast quarterback because you can either throw or run out of that play. So I don't know. It took me a long time as a kid to learn that you can have a lot better success in those games if you don't just immediately roll out of the pocket. That was a mind-blowing experience because I was just always like, got to run, got to run. And then it was, you're not running anywhere with Tony Romo rolling out like that. All right, let's get to the next piece of information that Matt Wells gave out. And this is less to me about what Matt Wells said and more about how he reacted to the question. So I kept Wyatt Thompson's question in it at the start so you could see Matt Wells' face change when he gets asked a question about Purdue transfer wideout Jerron Tibbs.
I'm gonna ask you about Tibbs. Is he what you were hoping?
Yeah, he's good. He's a good player. He's smart, versatile. Play lots of spots, blocks well on the perimeter, cares about blocking. He's got really good hand eye. He's got strong hands and probably a little deceptively faster than you think. He's a big body. I think he's going to have a really good year. We're very, very hopeful of that. He is too. He's a great kid, man. He's been raised the right way, and he's, I think, bought into everything that we're all about here at K-State.
Well, what do you make there of the wry smile that Matt Wells got and the quick confident answer of, yeah, I think he's going to be pretty good, all that? To me, it's pretty telling. And I, you know, we think that K-State has blown smoke for years upon years of what the receivers are going to do. At the end of the day, I think about how many times did that actually come from coaches, or was that just kind of made up out of thin air by fans and media? Because I think that we have a bigger part in that kind of stuff going on than what the coaches ever have. But we've seen enough, we've heard enough from all these different areas for me to continue to believe that there is no reason to slow down the Tibbs hype train.
Yeah. You know, when sometimes it's like, it's not what you, when somebody says it's not what you say, but it's like how you said it. That really seems to be kind of what this Matt Wells quote about Jerron Tibbs was, because, you know, he didn't really say anything like mind blowing when he was talking about him, but how he said it makes you think that he is very, very excited. And what is so fascinating about the whole Jahron Tibbs hype train is what I laid out in the season total for over under. Like, a wide receiver two at K-State has never gone for over 600 yards since 2014. So if he has over 600 yards, I would consider that a success. If him and Jace Brown both get over 800 yards, the K-State offense is rolling. Like, it is so hard to quantify what a successful season is like for Jahron Tibbs, because the expectations for a wide receiver two are just so low at K-State that it makes it hard to really think, like, what is a successful season? And that also makes it hard because then, you know, there's so many weapons on this offense that we've been talking about. Like, what is success for him? But I would say in that neighborhood of like 650-ish yards with five or six touchdowns, I would be thrilled with that for a wide receiver too, because, you know, we've also been the people that have been harping on that, like, Jace Brown has a legitimate shot to get to 1,000 yards this year. Like, if he doesn't, I think that would be a little bit disappointing for him because of how much he has really grown in his trajectory on where he's going. Unless that him not getting to 1,000 means that Jahron Tibbs probably is in that 800 to 900 yards that are both about at 900. I think that that's kind of disappointing. It's like if Jace Brown gets to 1,000 and Tibbs gets to like 650, that would be the best wide receiver one and wide receiver two season for K-State in 11 years. So yeah. I think that people, the hype train is warranted because everybody keeps bringing it up, players, coaches. When there's been open practices, I think that every single person that is at an open practice has written about that Jahron Tibbs did something crazy. But like, I don't want people to like get like upset if he only has like 650 yards, because that would, again, be easily the best wide receiver two season at K-State in the last 11 years.
Well, you know, we talked about that in the over-unders that got posted today. And that's kind of what, like, I don't remember. I think I said he would go over. I think he did 650 and a half. I said over. I said I didn't feel great about it. But I was of the same mindset. Even if it's 600 yards, like, boy, you take that. Because you go and look at what K-State has had production-wise in that world, like, that's what leading receivers look like most years. I mean, 600 yards, that's three quarters of the way to what Jace Brown did as the top receiver for K-State last year. And it probably then would include, you know, some touchdowns. Like, we think he's going to be big, and the catches that he does get are going to be significant. So I think it's real. It doesn't mean that you're going to have two 1,000 yard receivers and you're going back to 2014 with Lockett and Sexton, but it does mean that you've got a viable guy that actually, like, you've got two guys on the field that are going to scare the opponent's defense now, which was not the case the last couple of seasons.
No, we're talking about, like, we're hoping that he gets like that 650 range. K-State won the Big 12 in 2022. Malik Knowles was the leading receiver with 725 yards.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that'd be barely less than Knowles had in 22. And then the wide receiver two, which is, this is the best wide receiver two season that K-State has had in the last 11 years, other than the Curry Sexton year. Phillip Brooks had 587 yards in 2022.
Which, like, is crazy. That is too, because I would have said that I would have thought that, like, the second receiver that would have scared me the most in 22, if I was a defense, I would have said Cade Warner, which, yes. I, like, is why I will say, like, 2022, it got to a good spot, because for what the offense needed, you had Deuce Vaughn and DJ Giddens on that team. And you also had, for a good chunk of the season, Adrian Martinez being able to run the ball himself. Like, you didn't need to be crazy when you threw the ball, but they had three trustworthy guys. The problem, you know, with a guy like Phillip Brooks came the fact that the next year Phillip Brooks should not be a number one receiver ever. Yeah. And didn't really have, like, Phillip Brooks was solid, but he was kind of a product of the fact that, like, Malik Knowles was the number one, and then you had Cade Warner. Like, it just you didn't have to do a ton of incredible things or stuff out of the ordinary than just running some simple routes and making some catches.
And you also get hampered, and you even wrote about this when Phillip Brooks was the wide receiver one at K-State. He was only 5'8".
Yeah. Yeah, I've been big on size for receivers. It's not paramount. I mean, Jace Brown is, but Jace Brown's 6 foot. Like, that's taller than a lot of what K-State was trotting out there for the last couple of years. And so then you factor into it. We know about Jaron Bradley. Like, he's massive. Jerron Tibbs is 6'2". And so now K-State's looking at this, and I don't know the last time that this would have been the thing, but the top three receivers on the depth chart are all going to be 6 foot or taller. And 1'6", 1'6", 2", 1'6", 5". Like, that's a big deal for K-State right now. That it gives your quarterback a little bit more margin for error with his throws because they're bigger bodies that can go do things. And not only that, but like talking about Phillip Brooks, I know it sounds crazy to some to say because he was a Big 12 wide receiver, but he was limited as an athlete compared to what I think you're getting from Jace Brown and Tibbs. And certainly Bradley with, you know, his size and what he can do with it. Now, I don't want people going crazy and thinking that Bradley's had a disappointing year if he's under 300 yards. Like, he's kind of in the category with some of the other guys like Lincoln Cure, where before the season, I don't know that you can quantify what a successful year for them is. It's just going to have to be how it plays out in front of you. And looks like, you know, we can say this, Dante Cephas was a total failure last year for K-State. And there, you know, there's a world in which if things turn out differently, same numbers, maybe we say it's different, but his catches were insignificant for the most part last season.
I would say there's going to be Jace Brown and Jerron Tibbs are going to be your 1-2 in receiving yards. I'm not really saying anything earth shattering there.
Breaking news.
But I think that you're going to see after that, like, a pretty big drop off, because I think there's going to be a lot of guys that are around the same yardage number. So I think that kind of is where it's really tough to quantify. Like, three down, there could be a guy that has like 325 yards, and then three other guys behind him that have like 290 or so.
Yeah.
Like 290 to 270.
Yeah. I still think though, like, that's better than a lot of the things that you would think of.
Yes. With K-State 100%
recently. So, like, I don't think people should be disappointed in that. Like, don't get an inflated idea of what a better version of receivers looks like for K-State, but just know that it is going to be better this season, at least, you know, in my eyes, and I think we'll see it.
That's why, like, the raw numbers are good, but I think that context with those numbers, I think, also matters. That's why I've been, like, so high on what Avery actually did last year opposed to some other people. Because, I mean, that was his first season starting. He broke the sophomore passing record and broke the single-season touchdown passing record. Like, I know that record was not a high bar, because we've joked so many times about how low that number is. But, like, to do that also in your first season starting, I think, is something that should be talked about more and, like, hyped up more.
Yeah. Nope. I agree. We've been on this. You and I are in the boat of, you're a loser if you thought Avery Johnson played bad last season.
I'm not saying that
we're winners for thinking that he played great. I'm not saying that. Like, and I've been, you know, maybe a little scaredly going, like, you know, I think that there are some things that gave me some hesitance about going into this season, but not to the extent that some people have been.
There's two fan bases that are very vocal about how they didn't think that he was very good last year, and those two fan bases are the most annoying fan bases on the internet. So it's not a total shock.
I mean, you're talking about K-State and KU fans, where they both, because I think K-State fans have been, a chunk of them have been pretty annoying about the Avery Johnson hate after last season. And it's not even necessarily hate. It's just, like, you have to be able to call yourself out when your own expectations were too high, and then they inflate or deflate the way that you look at somebody. perfect example of an inflation. My own personal thoughts on a great pitcher in Major League Baseball named Brad Keller. Probably, you know, there was a way that I was spinning some 4.54 ERAs occasionally, being like, well, you know, he only got roughed up in a couple starts, just looking better here. No, those were bad seasons for Brad Keller. But I was emotionally connected to Brad Keller and that now. And I think some other people have gone the other way, where you look at K-State fans or national media, the people that were banging the Avery Johnson drum before last season, now because he didn't deliver to, you know, because he wasn't first team all Big 12 last year, because he wasn't a Heisman candidate or finalist, like, they're just completely off of him. I think that's insane. And that's what I'm trying to combat against. Like, am I confident in saying that I think Avery Johnson is going to do something this year? No, but more times than not in my head, I think that it does happen. I think he does get better. I think he does look like one of the two, if not the best quarterback in the Big 12 this season. Some of that has to do with the improvement that he has to make on his own. I think another chunk of that is I think the situation of Matt Wells at offensive coordinator is going to be better for K-State and Avery Johnson and a lot of other players on this team than Connor Riley last year. Doesn't mean that Connor Riley was a bad offensive coordinator. I don't think he was. But we have seen now three offensive coordinators under Chris Klieman. Matt Wells is about to be the fourth. Courtney Messingham was not a bad offensive coordinator. I know people probably don't want to hear that right now. He was not a bad offensive coordinator.
He was fine.
He was bad in certain situations, and you realize then, oh, it can be better because Colin Klein is a great offensive coordinator. Because if he wasn't, he would not be the OC at, you know, one of the SEC schools that's just throwing money all over the place in Texas A&M. Connor Riley doesn't mean he's a bad offensive coordinator, but I think there were some blind spots last season. I think it's a struggle to have a guy that's never called plays before. I think, you know, it's a struggle to have a guy that's an offensive line coach be your coordinator and then to pair it with a running back like DJ Giddens, where I think sometimes the thought process got a little pigeonholed. And I think with having Matt Wells, who's quarterback's coach on top of it, has experience with a quarterback like Jordan Love in his system before at Utah State and all these other things, I think that you're in a better spot this year. And it's just makes the process easier too. Like, all these teams that don't have a quarterback's coach as their OC, they're going through a complicated game of like phone call, basically, where last year it was Connor Riley calls the play. He has to tell the play to Matt Wells, and Matt Wells has to give the play to Avery Johnson. Okay, well, that zaps a little bit of, you know, some of that communication time in the helmet. Iowa State was doing the same thing last year. Like, the play call would go out. The quarterback's coach would then feed it to Rocco Beck. Like, it's a little disjointed, and I think it's good just to have it be immediate and free-flowing right there, where it's one-to-one communication, not one-to-one-to-one. And there's just so much that I think is going to be better this season. And it's a lot of little things, but I think a lot of little things adds up to a big win when you consider how close K-State was in their failures last season, where if Matt Wells is calling games last year, does the Houston game go differently? Possibly. You know, Arizona State, how does that look? Because as much as it feels like K-State was out of it instantly, I mean, they were pretty dead, but the game wasn't overly out of reach. Obviously, Iowa State, like, they battled in that thing, and they were there in it. Now, we know that some of the mistakes in the Iowa State game, those are areas where Avery Johnson needs to get better. Those are areas where certain players with experience should elevate a little bit more. But K-State was so close in all their shortcomings last year for me to think that all the little things that I think are going to improve with Matt Wells could total up to something really significant.
Yeah, right there with you. I'm expecting some fun things offensively and just very intrigued because, you know, nobody really talked about pace with Matt Wells today. But, you know, digging into what he did at Utah State, what he did at Texas Tech, Matt Wells is not a slow-paced offense. He's more, I mean, I think that when I was looking into it, Utah State, one of the years that he was there was like top 15 in plays per game. I know that football has really changed and how fast you can go because now now the game clock still runs after first downs, except for at certain situations. And when you go out of bounds now, the clock still runs except for in certain situations. But, you know, tempo might be a little bit better. And I anticipate the tempo being higher, not just with Matt Wells, but also, you know, you have an experienced quarterback that has been there and done that now. I mean, we saw it in 22, it was just his first year calling plays. But when K-State was kind of rolling with Adrian Martinez, it was because Colin Klein was letting K-State play faster and keep it going and keep it going. The offense slowed down a little bit when Will Howard came in. But even when Will Howard was in, it wasn't like a total slowdown, but it was slowed down more than when Adrian Martinez was in. I mean, I remember that Texas Tech opening drive. That was the first time I've ever seen a team call timeout against K-State because K-State was going too fast and Texas Tech couldn't keep up. So I think that we're going to see a little bit more pace this year too.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for offenses, especially ones that are built like K-State's are. You know, like the talent that they have, and this is another thing where it probably just sounds like I'm trying to knock Connor Riley at every turn, but you know, Scott Wildcat, others have hated my take, and that's fair. Some of you might as well, that I thought that given the OCM running back situation last year, that it may have been a bad pairing for the rest of the offensive talent that K-State had. When you have Avery Johnson and Dylan Edwards and Jace Brown as your three main guys on offense, and now you're going to throw like a tool like Lincoln Cure into it. I mean, tool and, you know, like, effective to use, not in the derogatory way to call somebody a tool. I think you want to go faster, and I think going faster is going to make you pretty dangerous because those guys are going to have a gear when things are wearing down that a lot of other people are not. So I think it's shaping up to be good for K-State. And, you know, most of the time you watch these and you just go, nah, boring, whatever. We knew that. Who cares? Watching Matt Wells today, that got me really excited.
Yeah, no, I was very excited watching him. That's also not saying that Joe Klannerman was like boring.
Oh, Joe Klannerman's never boring. I mean, no. Come on, that's
but we're just offensive guys. And when the OC really lights up like he did at certain points today, makes you excited because it really feels like things are coming. Because as much as I love a good defense, it's a lot more exciting when the team is putting up points than stopping other teams from scoring. Unless, and I challenge Joe Klannerman this, if the K-State defense finds a way to score a touchdown in every single game, we'll definitely talk about them a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. If you just score points, Joe, I mean, we'll talk about you. That's my challenge to you. The more I talk about you, it's truly dependent on how many points you score. You score more points, I talk about you. So that's.
And I also think that, like, with that too, like, some of us, like, another reason that we really gravitated towards the offense for today's press conference that we're talking about, a lot more flash and substance, and I don't want to say like unknowns offensively, but a lot more new offensively, a lot more like exciting because, you know, it's a returning quarterback that's really fun, dynamic weapon at running back, new wide receiver that's continuing the hype train rolling. K-State's defense, and like I mean this in like a loving way, isn't very flashy because you know that they're going to be super, super solid because they have every year outside of 2020 in the climate era. Like, you know that they're going to stop the run and put you in passing situations. And it is like very predictable. Like, you know that their defense is going to be solid. Yeah. Offensively, like this is the most dynamic offense that they've had on paper in the climate era.
Wild cards. Get excited for it.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Let's close out. Let's do a little Beat the Media guide to finish things off today.
We haven't given defense any love today, so I feel like we should do a defensive trivia.
I mean, what a zig and zag by you right there. Okay. Let's see. Let's get to the defense.
Can't have everybody say that we hate defense on the show.
Okay. I'm trying to find a good one here for you. Oh, no, I like this. I like this one a lot. Okay. This might be a little tricky, but we're going to do it. Today, we are going to talk about the top defensive performances in terms of yards. So total yards allowed, there are 11 instances on here. So you have to tell me the 11. I'm trying to think how I want you to do this.
It's going to be fun.
You just have to give me the year that you think it would have happened. Okay. And if there's a duplicate year, then you get credit for it. All right. Okay, and then sure. I can give you some backstory on the game. Okay.
Okay. So I don't actually have to think of a game. I just have to think of a year.
Yeah. But I'll give you a bonus point if you can tell me the game. So, okay.
Well, now I got to go through my notes on here, cause there's definitely some offensive games that I know that the defense went crazy in.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Why are you? What are you consulting notes for? Why do you have notes on this?
Because I know that some of the offensive games were like something to zero, and I assume that the defense probably played pretty well if they shut a team out and also won by a million points.
Well, there's a possibility of all of that. Okay, you are on the clock.
That's why the Ball State game came to my mind.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's number two all time. 2000, you didn't give me the year, but you gave me a team. So
sorry that I went with the specific game.
Well, shoot, I guess I'm giving you get bonus points for that one then. Ball State, September 16th, 2000, only 51 yards for the Cardinals in that game.
That is embarrassing.
Yeah. But believe it or not, there's an even more embarrassing performance on this list.
I'm going to say Indiana State. In 98.
I mean, look at you go. That another bonus point for Mr. Galloway. Yes, that's eighth all time. Only 87 yards for the Sycamores in 1998.
How do you, if you're Ball State, how do you have less yards than Indiana State did in 1998? I mean, that is rough.
Stuff.
Okay. Big score. So I don't know. I'm going to guess that this is on here, but I don't love it. KU and 02.
Ooh, no, that's wrong, unfortunately for you. Yeah, not right. Not right.
There's probably an 02 game on here, though.
Oof, that's another whiff. There is surprisingly not a 2002 game on here.
Okay. I'm going to say that there's probably another 1998 game on here.
Okay.
I don't have...
You're just guessing the year?
Yeah, I don't have a specific game for this one.
Okay. Yes, there is another 1998 game on here, and you're talking about embarrassing, couldn't muster all those yards, Kansas... 1998 against KU, 44 yards for the Jayhawks. It's the least amount of yards K-State has ever allowed in the game.
That's crazy that 64-0 had more yards than the 98 KU team did. That is kind of wild.
Okay, so you got you've got six guesses left that I'll give you.
No 0-2 on here with the amount of talent on that 0-2 defense. Insane, by the way. But is some of this just, I think some of this is probably just inflated by who they played.
Who we play?
I'm going to say that there's probably a 1997 game on here.
That would be correct. Two 1997 games, by the way. Texas A&M in 1997, ninth all time, only 90 yards for A&M, and only 56 yards for Bowling Green that season. That's fourth all time. Oh. So you have 8, 9 are off the board here.
Insane game that you just kind of unlocked. This is probably a question that I can't ask because it gives it away. Is there any duplicate teams on here?
No, there is not any duplicate teams on here. I will tell you that.
Okay. the game that I just thought of was that 2019 Bowling Green, because they were terrible.
Or Charlotte that season? Was that the Charlotte year? They were really bad? Yeah. No, those games are not on here. Was that a guess that you were giving?
No. Okay. That was just me saying that was a game that I thought of when I said if there's any repeats.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
I'm going to say... there's probably, again, you know, you got to go back to this well, because this was like the time and era. There's probably at least one 1999 game as well.
It's a good guess. There is Temple 1999, 82 yards, September 11th, 1999.
Now it's... So when I said 98 KU, that means that's the or the 98, and you just said KU, that means that's the only the only 98 game.
Yep, no 98 left.
Okay, that helps me as I'm thinking of like years that I want to go back to. The fact that is any of them like pre-Snyder?
There are two pre-Snyder games on here.
Oh, Atlanta. Okay. I'm going to say another game that I know that was a big score, because I've been doing some preparing of like what games I think that you might do.
I mean, kind of cheating, but yes.
For like certain trivia. Is it really cheating, or is that doing my homework?
That's kind of, I mean, this isn't Jeopardy here. I mean, you can't kind of prepare yourself for this. That there's actual answers here that you know where they're going to come from. Jeopardy, it's like, are you going to study the entire world?
and this was the game that we talked about with highest scores. Is the 1995 game versus Akron on here?
You should have shut your mouth. 1995 is on here. But it's not Akron. It's Northern Illinois. So I'm not giving you credit for it, because you tried to give me the game. So, you know, if you had said 95 and then tried to get maybe, but, you know, I have to be a little harsh here. Two guesses left for you. Let me dive into giving some hints. The two non-Snyder years happened in back-to-back seasons. Okay. And so then there are the other two games left.
Uh-huh.
Are Snyder 2.0 seasons.
Oh, okay.
Which might surprise you.
That actually does surprise me quite a bit.
One of which happened when I was in college.
So pre-Snyder, those are probably never going to be guessed by me. I would take a guess on.
I mean, probably not. I mean, there's a lot of years that happened pre-Snyder.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just gonna pull out a random year from a hat and guess. So while we were in college, and it wasn't that Bowling Green game, because that was climbing. Was there a game in? I don't know what game it could be. Was there a game in 2018?
There was not a game in 2018. Incorrect.
Was it 2017?
Oh, using up both of your guesses right there. And some might say, a little tricky there. That's okay. That's the point of the game. Listening comprehension. I didn't say when we were in college. I said when I was in college.
Well, that's why I said, I guess
we are
true.
Months apart in age, but we are a class apart in school. I was a freshman in 2016, Missouri State. The game was called at halftime. The Bears only had 54 yards. It's recognized as third on this list in the K-State media guide. The other games you didn't get, Iowa State, 1969. That's fifth all time, 67 yards. Kentucky. In 1970, the Cats went to Lexington and only gave up 107 yards. And then Tennessee Tech in 2009, 107 yards. So yeah, those were the ones that you were missing.
Where is that Bowling Green game on this list?
I couldn't tell you. It stops after the top 10.
Oh,
I mean, we can go back and we can go look at what Bowling Green did yardage wise in that game. What it was 2019. They were bad.
They might be the worst team I've ever seen K-State play.
Let's see here. Bowling Green in that game, they still got to 140 yards, and they were 0 for 11 on third down and 0 for 2 on fourth down. They only had first downs in the entire game, and they still had more yards than all those teams that we just listed.
They may be the worst team I've ever seen K-State play.
Yeah. Not good. Fun story about that Missouri State game. It was, you know, FCS. It was the home. Was that the home opener that year then, maybe? It was the third game, actually, because Florida Atlantic was the home opener, oddly enough. Yeah. That was in the middle of the day. But then that Missouri State game, it just poured and started storming. So they called the game at halftime. But I stayed waiting. I was like, well, of course, I'm going to stay to the end of the game. So I waited and was waiting. There were not many people left in the stadium. And then they finally announced, like, hey, it's going to get called. So I'm soaked already. And I'm walking back to the dorms in a gnarly thunderstorm. My now wife, who I had just known for barely weeks at that point, had already walked back without me. And so I just walked back in the rain. And I mean, I was soggy by the time I got back to Goodnow Hall. But yeah, I'll always hold a special place in my heart. Missouri State, 2016.
I thought about the 2018 game that I went with, that I was like thinking of, was the absurdity that was that Texas Tech game in 18.
Yes. It was freezing cold. They took away the touchdown from Dalton Risner.
That was the only like real redeeming quality about that game, because overall it sucked.
Yeah, Tech still managed 181 yards in that game. John Kurtz's quarterback king, Jet Duffy, threw for 150 yards by himself, but he had a QBR of 22 in that game. Alex Barnes had 136 yards. You want to take a guess how many carries he had?
Oh, I already pulled up the game.
Okay.
The game log. I mean,
32 is insane, and had to hurt every time he got hit in that weather.
Well, he touched the ball 34 times total.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
How did K-State only scored one touchdown in this game then? They scored. Malik Knowles caught a touchdown. Four Blake Lynch field goals and a safety. Jeez, yeah. I mean, I remember it was terrible, like a terrible situation for that game.
The most Bill 2.0 thing ever to score 21 points but only one touchdown.
Yeah, that'll blow some minds in there. I'm trying to think of some other really bad teams that were seen. 2017 was the Charlotte game. They still ended up with 168 yards in that game. So
what about Tennessee Tech
in 2009? You want to know what went down there?
Yeah,
well, let's go back. Crazy thing, that's 16 years ago. Tennessee Tech actually scored in the game and still made this list. They went on it. Well, what I say, they had 107 yards in the game. 73 of them came on their scoring drive to make it 7-7 in the first quarter. And then K-State scored 42 unanswered moving forward there. Some stuff from that game. They had negative 19 rushing yards. Their leading rusher was Cedric Wilkerson with 9 yards. The guy that Dante Gay touched the ball 7 times for 4 yards. That was the guy who got the most attempts. And then Lee Sweeney, their quarterback, 11 of 18, 121 yards, 1 touchdown. So they threw for 126 yards in the game, and they lost, you know, X amount of yardage because of sacks and whatnot. K-State that game, though, they were running all over the place. Daniel Thomas, 139 yards, two touchdowns. Keithan Valentine, 73 yards and a touchdown. Grant Gregory, 9 carries, 58 yards and a touchdown. And Carson Kaufman had a rushing touchdown
game as well. Of course, I see a Braden Wilson catch in this game. Braden Wilson
can't escape that guy.
Such an enigma. Like, he was everywhere in that era. Like,
and Travis Tannehill and Colin Klein caught a ball. I mean, who would have thought? You watching that 2009 Tennessee Tech game, and you're like, those guys are going to be instrumental in winning a Big 12 championship. You would have never have believed it. You would have been like, I doubt that.
Like, I'm watching the 2011 Miami game as we prepare for the KSO Classic. That's just talking about the 2011 season. This is going to be a fantastic show because it's going to be like we just roll the ball out and reminisce about 2011. And the first freaking player that I saw on K-State's sideline was Braden Wilson.
I mean, of course, that guy is everywhere. Which is hard to do for a fullback, just to be everywhere, but he has done it. All right, we've taken up enough of everybody's time today. We appreciate it. As always, if you want more on what went down today with Matt Wells, Joe Klanderman, head on over to KSO. You can find us at On3. Go from there, and we'll be back again tomorrow. Talk a little bit more about the Cats. And then Thursday, big show. It will be long as well, intentionally long. Derek Young making his long-awaited return to his own platform. So get excited for that. It'll be the three of us here. And then Friday, KSO Classic. And then we get real busy next week. We got to talk about the game. Drew and I got to record a couple of KSO Classics ahead of time because we are off to Ireland next Wednesday afternoon. Yeah, afternoon, not night. That has been amended to us. We're aware of it now. For Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. Thanks for watching and listening to the KSO Show. And you can catch the rest of what we got going over at On3.